want to get high, man?
Let's stimulate your mind.
Get up, Chucky!
What have we got here? A fucking comedian.
I mean, Rogan Kim?
California dreaming. Hello, and welcome to the Rogan Kim cast. It's me, Rogan Kim. Thank you so much for tuning in and listening. Honestly, as a podcaster, I don't deserve a single pair of ears to be listening to this, and the fact that there is even one, or even if you're deaf in one ear, or even if you're deaf and you can't hear this at all and you're just playing it just to give me a boost on the algorithm and the engagement, thank you. Thank you from the bottom of my heart. I realized that I was dying in LA. Well, it's not something I realized. I think this was something I realized when I was 18. Back in 1996, okay, I realized, this place is killing me. I gotta leave. So I did. And then 20 years later, I came back. And, you know, I was like, you know, I gotta give it another shot. I'll give it another go. You know, what did I know? I was just a kid. I had a bad childhood. And that probably colored my whole experience of LA. And I'm working with 20-year-old information, right? Like, I can't paint this place with such a broad brush because I had a bad experience back in the day. I'll come back. I'll give it a shot. Okay, so I did 7 years. And after 7 years, I realized, okay, I was right the first time. Why didn't I listen to myself the first time? Which does not bode well, you know, for my tendency to be a know-it-all, right? Because it just doesn't. Because I said, hey, maybe I don't know it all and I'll give it a shot. And then the conclusion was, I did know it all. So that isn't good for me and my ego. But I will say it's been good in the sense that, you know, I perhaps lost everything I had going in, but then came out with everything else, you know, like everything else that it was almost like a crucible. A purity test as in how you purify gold, right? The way you purify gold is you just blast it with heat until all the impurities just get burned off and you're just left with, this is what it is. I'm not quite sure what this is a metaphor for. Maybe it's just a metaphor for how I feel about living in the place I am. You know, maybe that's how I feel about it. I don't know. But I managed to escape, okay? I'm up here now. I'm in a lovely mountain town. It's an amazing place. I'm with my lovely lady, Nicole. It's been a great time. We're having a great time here. Just getting used to completely different lifestyle, right? Really reflecting. I mean, I've only been here for a couple of weeks, but just reflecting on the past 6 months or so, the past 7 years, 6 years, whatever. Just the past time I've had in LA, you know, juxtaposing all these thoughts I had as a kid, like what did I know as a kid, right? And sort of mishmashing them now that I'm a middle-aged guy and being like, all right, I could see the things that I had no idea about because I was young, I had no experience. But then on the other hand, I could see that, well, I was certainly an intuitive child, you know, maybe that's, I certainly had a lot of potential back then. So anyways, I don't know, part of the thing I think about a lot, or maybe that it strikes me. Okay. It's a weird way of saying it because it's something that's easy to forget, but then I'm often reminded by, right? And it's the fact that everything has changed since 2020. Right. And you know, sometimes that sounds dramatic. Like, oh, maybe the whole world changed, you know, and everything's fine. Everybody's going about their lives right now. Everybody's, you know, everybody's outside doing the thing. Things are back to normal, right? The new normal, we're in the new normal and everything's fine, right? Like, you know, in the background, depending on what your political leanings are and your individual feelings about what happened during the pandemic. I always use like air quotes since this isn't a visual medium. Yet, maybe you'll get to see my stupid face while I say these stupid words one day. Anyways, you're not seeing, but I can't help but use air quotes every time I say the word pandemic because I can't take the word seriously. You know what I mean? And I'm sure some of you are like, oh no, Rogan's one of those conspiracy theorists now. You know, he believes the virus isn't real, or the whole thing was a psyop, or, and he uses the word psyop over and over for everything. He said ketchup was a psyop the other day. You know what I mean? I get that. I get that sentiment. Okay. But I don't know, man. I'm just resting on my laurels of how right I was about LA when I was 18. So now I'm like, I'm right about 2020 pandemic. I'm right about the pandemic. I'm right about it. No, I mean, obviously I don't know shit. I don't know shit. What do I know? I don't know anything. I'm just a jagoff or an asshole or, you know, just, I shoot a lot of shit out of my mouth. I'm just talking a lot of shit here. Right. But to me, the pandemic is like, ugh, you know, like I can't even say the word pandemic without acting like a teenage girl about it, right? I roll my eyes immediately. I just go, pandemic. Like, everybody thinks it's so serious, but it's not. Like, you know, like drunk driving, or something, you know, whatever. That, I think, it's a little shout out to the Montanans. I hear that's the number one risk of death in an automobile, besides hitting a deer, drunk driving. Probably hitting a drunk deer is the number one thing, I think, because those fucking deer, they get fucking plastered and they just jump out into the road. Like, they, I don't know if they're trying to commit suicide or if they're trying to play chicken or something, but it's wild. Anyways, LA was killing me. All right, LA, you know, a lot of people will say, oh, LA is not so bad. And I will admit to you, there are things that are great about it, right? Culture, a lot of culture. I mean, there's no culture, but a culture as in the different cultures, a lot of different cultures. To some people, they think that's gross and stinky or whatever, and it is. But at the same time, a lot of good food, probably much better immune system, probably higher tolerance for chaos and difference, different languages. You know, if you speak more than one language, you're more likely to be better at learning things and probably a little smarter in general. I don't know. It makes sense, though, because, you know, you kind of get, if language is your key to reality, then if you only know one language, you're pretty much locked into one mode of reality, right? If you're not opening yourself up to other things. Anyways, LA, I believe I've said this before, that, you know, it's a vampire, right? It's a vampire. It sucks all the water in it from other places. Like, it's a desert that only lives because it has to steal water from its neighbors, right? We, as a kid, we learn about the aqueducts. You bring the water all the way down from up in Sacramento and from Colorado and Kern River Valley and stuff. You know, like, we have a number of aqueducts running right into Los Angeles to make sure every citizen of Los Angeles gets all the heavily treated, chlorinated water that they could possibly drink. And don't drink it, whatever you do. But if you want to drink it, here you go. Have at it. And meanwhile, it's some weird city-owned, it's not a private entity that owns the, you know, there's no water company. It's like the Department of Water and Power. So somehow the city owns all the power and the electricity, you know, like the mob kind of, you know. And if you watch, I guess, the movie Chinatown, you'd get a sort of fictionalized idea of that kind of stuff, right? Like rich guys who came in, bought cheap land, stole water from their neighbors who ended up being farmers and shit like that. And basically breaking their banks, making them poor, taking all their shit, dumping the water into the San Fernando Valley, which was arid, and they turned it into orange orchards, made a killing off of that, then developed the land, put real estate on top of it. And their descendants are currently making a killing off of that. And so there you go. Yeah, you know, and it's hard not to feel that, I guess. I don't know. That's why it was always hard for me to do mushrooms in LA. There's always this feeling, this vampiric sense. Is vampirism. I'm working on the plosives. Sorry for the plosives. I'm adjusting the mic so that the P's don't pop. So I'm a vampire. All right, that's better. Vampire. What the fuck? Oh, yeah, vampiric. The place is vampiric. You could see it. You could see it in the people aging, the people desperately trying not to age, obsessed with their looks, but, you know, trying not to wrinkle in a place of 365 day sun. You know, 365 days a year, there's sun. These people are trying not to grow old, right? They're just fighting this losing battle, throwing money, as much money as they can, at the problem, only to look like monsters, right? And to truly be monsters on the inside because they're so fixated with their outsides. You know, all they care only about the material world, the skin deep nature of reality, and so their insides are just rotten, right? Their insides are like nothing. It's just a black hole of wanting, and so it seeks to suck in any energy, any youthful energy, any positive energy, any good energy, anything it can to fill that hole, which will never be filled, right? The shit's never gonna get filled. Yet they're going to keep trying to fill it anyways. And you can see, you know, you can see the people turning. I've watched my friends turn. I've watched people turn over time. You just see them becoming like golems in a way, right? Like these weird, I guess like pretty golems or something. I mean, they're not pretty to me, but you know what I mean? It's just this very strange mind virus or something that takes over where you get just, I guess you can't help it. Can't help it. Can't help where you live, right? Your surroundings. It's like a chameleon on a branch, right? Or something. It's just going to adapt to its surroundings. So you can't, and humans are social creatures. We're adaptable creatures. We adapt to each other. We're always kind of, you know, using each other's cues to figure out what to do. So it makes sense in a given place. Everybody would sort of feed off of this energy, right? And kind of unconsciously, subconsciously act on it. It's always out there. So that was, and I feel like that's the thing I got when I was younger. I just couldn't, you know, I didn't have the breadth of experience that I do now to kind of put it into context in my life or to make it relatable, you know. But I think maybe, so I was doing this process serving thing, which the one thing I really liked about it is there were some beautiful drives. You know, LA, it is beautiful, the coast, the thing, the views, the you know, there's lots of things that are great about it, right? Lots of things that are terrible about it, just like any place else. You know, and I got to a point where I was so fried serving. All I did was work. The only time I wasn't working when I slept, as soon as I woke up, I was working. It was just all work all the time. And somehow I found myself at a CCW class, a concealed carry gun class. Because I think after the events of 2020, I was like, why don't I have a gun? And then the Supreme Court thing happened and they were just letting people have CCWs in LA. Cops were just giving them out. So I was like, okay, and signed up for this class. I met a dude. He said, oh, I work for this private security company and we work with the Beverly Hills police doing cybersecurity and stuff or monitoring stuff. And I was like, oh, okay. Are you guys hiring? And he was like, yeah. And then I ended up getting that job. So I quit process serving. I just quit it. Ended up getting this job. And basically what I was a glorified security guard, but good with computers, a computer security guard, but not like a cyber security person, you know, that like makes good money and does technical things and manages threats to a company's network infrastructure, things like that. You know, I was just a guy in front of a bunch of computer screens where the entire city of Beverly Hills is monitored by CCW cameras, CCTV cameras. CCW cameras would be awesome. You have like guns on them and you could just shoot. You could shoot the perpetrator. I could see that being abused. It's like an eye in the sky, the panopticon type thing that Beverly Hills has. And I guess that's how they keep their citizens safe, right? They keep their citizens safe by continually surveilling. But they did have they were conscious of privacy. They were like, you can't zoom into people's windows. You can't, you know, zoom into girls' titties and stuff. You know, you can't. And the thing is, the whole thing is recorded, so they know if you're doing it. You know, they're watching you as you're watching. So I was like training at they have a separate command center at Beverly Hills High School. They have like their own fucking shit with their own little, I guess the parents were up in arms about the cops having direct access to the kids. So they wanted like their own command center or something. Anyways, I mean, you get what you want when you're rich, right? So, kids, There's just a tiny command center in the high school, and I was there working the graduation, and they're just telling me about some guy they had to fire because he kept zooming into the cheerleaders, right? Kept zooming. Couldn't help it. And, you know, in some ways, okay, I get it. Like, you know, you're a guy, you're a hunter, you're zooming in on the target, but, you know, you are being surveilled the entire time as well. So it, you know, it's ridiculous. It's stupid, right? Like, why? But there you go. You know, it's really the man versus the animal, right? The impulse. Can you control your impulses knowing that you're being watched? And some people cannot. Some people can't, which is sad, I guess. Sad to say, right? But I guess good to know, right? There are some people, they can't control their impulses even if they know they're being surveilled. So even though a certain percentage of people act differently knowing that they are surveilled, there are still some who are like, fuck it, I don't care. You want to watch me do it? Watch me do it because I'm looking at those titties. Yeah. And then they fire it and you're like, it was worth it. I mean, the id is obviously going to be like, it was worth it, right? I mean, your brain might be like, that was stupid. We're broke now. We can't zoom into any titties anymore because we don't have any money. Well, I guess you could on your phone. I guess that's what we're stuck doing, zooming in on titties on phone like a peasant when I could have been in a command center, you know, surreptitiously doing it and not getting caught or something. I don't know. Anyways, so I ended up working at the Beverly Hills Police Department, which, you know, I'm not a fan of the cops. I've thought about being a cop, but only to be a homicide detective, because I thought, you know, maybe I could catch killers. But I am kind of glad I didn't end up doing that. I think life would have taken a much darker turn for me. So I'm kind of glad I didn't do that. But, you know, I don't know. I mean, I have the opinion of cops I do back when I did, when I was in the drug war, right? It was just they're foot soldiers of the state, right? Like they'll put you in jail for smoking a joint just because they're told to, right? Like that's, never forget that a cop will fucking smash your face in if told to, because he is an instrument of the state. So, you know, but on the other hand, I recognize that they are people, human beings who as individuals want to do good stuff. You know, they want to do good and they want to, you know, of course they may be committing evil while they do it, but they're still good people, right? There's fine people on both sides, you know, right? Like, just whatever. Like, I think when I was, that's the difference between like 20 years younger, right? 20 years younger, I'd be like, fuck those pigs, man. Fuck them all. Fuck them. You know, but now I'm like, you know, it's like, tons of those cops smoke weed and know it's bullshit too. And it's all whatever, man. But I would never want to be one. So working beside them was very interesting. And really start to like kind of empathize with these guys, because you see the calls they go on and you're like, oh my God, really? Like they have to deal with some of the worst shit, right? Some of the worst problems of humanity. I mean, it's not like the Beverly Hills cops were dealing with, you know, a lot of murder and what they were dealing with is a lot of thievery, actually. A lot of thievery, a lot of people running into stores and, you know, the smash and grab stuff. Somebody fucking ran a car into the Louis Vuitton store or some shit, like just smashed a car into the window and tried to break it open. They couldn't, you know, a lot of just daytime robberies. Apparently there was a South American gang that's very good at what they do. They like get away all the fucking time because they're just they have like, it'll be like a guy and two girls. They go in looking like they're shopping. They'll have multiple cars waiting, and then they'll intentionally confuse the cops, and they know where the cameras are, so they know where to go. So like, they scouted the cameras. So that's the other thing, is like, now that, you know, Beverly Hills has been very public about their CCTV program, that means all the criminals also know about the CCTV program now, and you can see the cameras. So now you can just mark down where the cameras are, which way they're looking, and then that's how you can commit your crimes now, right? Like, you know, so many times you'd be like trying to find someone and be like, there's no cameras pointing that way, it's going the wrong way, you know. And then the answer becomes, well, we need more CCTVs and more drones. They had drones too, pretty sweet drones, you know, flying around and stuff like that. And, you know, whatever, man, I don't like the surveillance state. You know, I'm not a big fan of it. But the city of Beverly Hills, you know, it wasn't LA. It's just literally the city of Beverly Hills. That's what they wanted, you know, and they got it. And one of the things I got to learn about Beverly Hills, you know, I think one of the best ways to learn about a city, maybe the psychology, the underlying psychology of a city, is listening to their 911 calls. You know, and that's, I think I was in a privileged position to listen to the 911 calls of Beverly Hills. Okay. And I'll tell you, it is not pretty. I mean, it probably gave me less faith in humanity than I think I've ever had. And, you know, it's taken a lot, I think, to come back from that and be like, all right, it's just Beverly Hills, not everybody's, no way, right? Because, all right, I would say, like, first off, you're manning the cameras and you see, hear the calls, and you see that, okay, homelessness is a huge problem. Like, this is probably the biggest problem that they have. Homeless people are just coming into Beverly Hills, just wandering around. All these people, nice, rich people, trying to shop, you know, at their Ferragamo and whatever the fuck stores they're at, you know, all those fancy, you know, fancy brand names, high ticket items, things like that. And then you have all these homeless people coming, you know, people trying to have a nice time at the latest, you know, pasta place, the latest trendy restaurant. And then what do you know, this homeless guy comes, just sits at your table. What are you doing? You can call the cops, you can get them to move, and then the cops come, get them to move, and then they're like, do you want to press charges or no? And then most people say no. And then after a while, I started realizing nobody is pressing charges. All they do is call the cops, get them to come, shoo the homeless people away. The homeless people just go to somebody else, and then they call the cops, and they come and shoo them away, and nobody wants to press charges. I saw a guy walk into a clothing store, rip a display of a tennis racket off of a mannequin, and then it had this big metal spike at the end of it, and so he's now got this tennis racket spear, and also he's pushing an office chair down the street. So he's got an office chair, you know, and he's like this big guy. He's wearing his purple hoodie. He looks like a caveman, and he looks so dirty. He looks black. A lot of people thought he was black or Hispanic, and it turns out he's white. He's carrying a tennis racket with a metal spike sticking out of it, pushing a rolling office chair just down the street, just going up and down, you know, like, you know, Beverly Drive or whatever, like just going up and down Rodeo Drive, just wandering around, and random people are calling the cops on him because he's threatening them or waving that thing around. The store he took the racket from didn't want to press charges. God knows where he got the chair. Nobody wants to press charges, right? Like, and so that's like a whole day with just this one homeless guy deciding to run amok and nobody doing anything. Now, certain people, I guess you can 5150 them, which means they're so crazy, you gotta lock them up, put them in an institution or something, at which point they will let them out somewhere near downtown so they can join Skid Row. You know, and that's sort of the system there. And, you know, you side with the regular people, of course, watching this go down on camera. They're just normal people just going about their day. They don't know what to do. You know, these homeless people are assaulting them, and, you know, they don't deserve that, right? And I get it, man. That'd fucking suck if I was trying to, you know, kind of have lunch or something and some dude sat at my table. Like, I get, you know, that sucks. I get it. But then you start listening to these 911 calls, and you start, you know, hearing more of them. You know, you start hearing, and then you start thinking, okay, I think I'd rather the homeless people have the city, honestly. I think the homeless people deserve it more, you know, in some ways, because the people calling 911 are, this is the type of call, I'm telling you, this is the type of call that would come in, okay? It'd be nighttime, and it'd be like, hello, 911, I'm trying to get home right now, but there's a black BMW parked that I haven't seen before. It's very mysterious, and I think I need the police to come by just to make sure that I get home safe, right? And you're watching, you can see the guy on camera, you see the car, nothing's going on. We're like, why isn't the guy just going? Like, there's nothing. I mean, it's a weird car, but who cares? Why does he have to call 911? Why do you have to call 911 because you're scared of a weird car? I don't understand. Like, that has never occurred to me in my mind to ever do that. Right? Like, if I see something weird, I don't go 911. I see something weird. Like, what are they going to do about it? I just feel like I just have to hope nothing bad happens. Hopefully it's just in my head and I go home, and usually it is, and it's fine. Honestly, I usually don't go weird car, especially in a big city, in a metropolis. You know, there's millions of people in Los Angeles, and you see a weird car and you're going to call 911. Doesn't even, Okay, anyway, so that's what he did. So meanwhile, it's not a high priority, okay? There's other things, car accidents, there's other shit going on, all right? The car moves. We can see on camera the car moves. The one of the guys calls it in, says the car's moved. You can probably cancel the call, you know? So the guy can go down the alley now to his house, to his apartment or whatever. He can go. It's fine. The car's gone. The weird, scary car's gone. And you can go. But he doesn't. He's waiting there. He's waiting for the cops, you see. So he calls the cops again, calls 911 again. He's like, I just called 911 about this car, serious car, and I still don't have an escort. And then the dispatcher's like, well, we can see you on camera, and we see that the car is gone. So there's actually no need for a unit to come down there because we're doing other stuff. Okay, they don't say that. They're usually very polite. I mean, almost angelically polite for the kind of shit they have to deal with. Then the guy who called 911 is like, no, that is unacceptable. I need a police escort right now. I'm a 20-year-old Jewish boy, and I am afraid of walking down this alley. Okay, and then, of course, 911 dispatcher had to be like, yeah, we can't do that. There's no crime. There's no nothing. The threat, you said, it's gone. Everything's gone. There's no reason to send you a personal police escort because now you're afraid of walking down the alley of which there's no more threat. Okay? These are the kinds of calls that would come in. People would be like, there's somebody following me. There's somebody following me. Like, how do you know they're following? They're walking the same direction as me. Have you confronted them or anything? And say, no. And then a cop will come by and be like, hey, you following this person? They'll be like, no. And then they just go their separate ways. And maybe they were following them and the cop came and scared them off. Maybe they didn't. But I'll just have to say that these are grown men. These are not even women. Okay, women, I get. You're walking around at night. Probably shouldn't be. Or at least give them guns or something. I don't know. You know? I can understand you feel physically threatened, okay? But if you're a grown man, then this is what the police would be saying. That's a grown man. Okay, I gotta go. Gotta fucking go out there. Like, you know, anyways, that's why I say I think the homeless people deserve it more because the homeless people are at least proactive, okay? They're going out there, they're taking shit. They're not calling the cops when things don't go their way. They're not fucking, actually, that's not true. Okay, I take it back. Some of the homeless people are calling the cops themselves because they have Obama phones. Okay, so this is another thing I got to witness was the downside of giving everybody an Obama phone, you know, a homeless person an Obama phone, is now they can call 911 on each other. And so, you know, you get this one lady going just like, man, this motherfucker won't leave me alone. He's fucking, and you can see them on camera and we're like, Edith, just walk away from him, Edith, walk away from him. You know, and you can, you know, that's Edith. She gets into fights a lot, but you know, like, and then she calls 911. Okay, so that's what we need now is homeless people calling 911 on other homeless people. All right, so I guess even the homeless people will say yes, there is a homeless problem, but honestly, I would say there's more of like a people problem. You know, there is a homeless people problem, but I think it's the people part that's the problem, less so the homeless. Because amongst the homeless, I've seen some go-getters, I'll tell you that, okay? These guys are working hard. I have no idea what they're doing. It doesn't make any sense at all to normal society, but they are not slacking, okay? They're doing something. They're doing something so much so that people are calling the cops on him and being like, this guy's acting weird. I don't know what he's doing. But the guy is busy. He's working hard. He's working harder than you are, right? You could have taken it upon yourself to investigate what this thing is. You could have given it a little bit of effort, right? And be like, oh, this is my neighborhood where I live. Let me investigate what this strange man is doing instead of calling on the state to come with guns and do something about it, right? That's your answer to everything. People call 911 for like flooding, like my pipes have flooded. I'm calling 911. You know, just you can call a plumber. Call a plumber. Okay, so you can see why it really wore on me. It wore on me, and so you know, but I'm here now. I'm here. I'm in the Northwest. I'm in the Northwest of Montana. I'm in right, I'm surrounded by national parks. It's crazy how I just came from surveilling Beverly Hills and this homeless, like this really this I mean, I would say it's like an infestation. I don't know. It's a real catastrophe. Yeah, it's really, you could see it going in real time. And even the richest neighborhood is, I wouldn't say the rich, but you know, like, let's just say a famously rich neighborhood, a neighborhood you wouldn't expect there to be that big a problem in, having tons of problems with it, just from spillover, right? You literally push them across the, there's one street called San Vicente Boulevard. One side of it is Beverly Hills. The other side is LA. They just literally just push them on the other side. As soon as they push them onto the other side, it's out of their hands. It's LA's problem now. You stay over there. Of course, they'll come back, but then you just push them back, and then so on and so forth. And I don't know how long this is going to happen, but you know, it's crazy to come from something like that where, you know, you get here and I'm like, where the fuck is it? Where is everybody? Right? I'm just walking around. You just walk around, and not like I'm in a deserted place. It's relatively populated. I mean, honestly, like, it's not even 10,000 people, so it's super low. I've never lived in a place with this few people, but there's like a touristy thing. You know, there's some people. There's a Ralph's or whatever a Ralph's is here. You know, it's a Kroger. It's like there's things. Civilization is here. It's a mile to a Starbucks or something. You know, there's. It's not like I'm in the total sticks or boonies. I guess until winter comes, and then I'll see how stranded I am. But anyways, that's in a couple months, you know, we'll see. But besides that, you know, it's very interesting to be in a place where with a low population density, you just kind of feel the pressure, kind of being relieved from people, being away from things. I lived in LA, San Francisco, New York. So there's always some center of something, you know. There's LA had Hollywood, and there was tech in San Francisco, and then there's New York had, you know, finance and comedy, stand-up comedy for me. And, you know, there's all these like institutions, right? And you come here and it's just like, it's just, there's rodeos. People have their kids are raising steers, and the neighbor chick, there's a teenage girl next door. She captures rabbits from the neighbor. She traps bunnies from the neighbor because there's neighborhood bunnies. They're wild, and there's no real laws against they're considered vermin, I guess, or varmints. So you can trap them. She's like trapping them and trying to breed them. You know, that's the kind of thing the kids do here, right? Kids in LA are trying to become whores online, whereas kids here are probably also trying to become whores, but because of the internet, but they at least get to have a childhood where they trap bunnies and raise steers. Okay. So I don't know. I feel like that's better, at least better for the soul. Like later on, you can choose to be a whore later, I guess, but you know, at least you could have a good upbringing. You could have something to reflect on those dark days. Anyway, one of the things that's very interesting up here is that weed is legal. And there's just shitloads of so many dispensaries, too many dispensaries. It's like too many. It's kind of like how many open mics there were on my street back in the golden days, right? There was like something like six open mics on two, three blocks. It was just, you knew it was a bubble. There's no way this can last. And it's similar. It's like a similar feeling with the dispensaries. There's so many fucking dispensaries and so many. And interestingly, it's for a place that's somewhat based, you know, Montana has got some, I guess somewhat libertarian kind of thing. It's still kind of state heavy too. The state does have a heavy presence. I mean, hunting for one is heavily regulated, and probably should be. That's fine. I don't, you know, whatever. But like, you know, the state's all up in that, and weed is also heavily regulated. You can't even work in a dispensary until you get a license. You got to go through this whole thing, get a license just to work, and then in the dispensary. I'd say the prices are not that much cheaper. Kind of on par. I would say the quality of the weed is it's up there, you know, it's almost there. The edible game is almost non-existent. No edibles to really speak of. Drinks, they have a couple drinks that are pretty good, but even I would say like they have a problem with distribution because of their weird system they have of each dispensary, I guess, has to kind of make its own plants, and you can't really, I don't know. It seems like you can't have a company that just sells weed to the dispensaries. Each dispensary has to grow their own weed. So it's, I mean, on some ways, I think I like what I like about it is the mom and popification of these weed shops. But then on the other hand, it's just quality control. Like everything's out of, you know, it's all over the place, which though, I guess it's kind of like the black market, right? It's like the black market, except with like regulated prices and times and all that stuff and tax. So I don't know. But it is nice. It's nice that I don't have to be a criminal again. You know, that's where I came from, right? As a child of the drug war, I guess I'd be like going back to acting like weed is illegal again. That would be weird, but it's not. So great. The other thing that I think, of course, I like about the state of Montana is that it's a constitutional carry state, meaning that, you know, I don't have to have a permit or anything to carry a gun on me, concealed or open. I'm totally fine. Not that I've seen a lot of people packing openly, but I am just assuming everybody is carrying concealed. Like everybody. You might as well, right? And I think that kind of makes it, it's like an armed society is a polite society kind of thing. You're just walking around. You know, I just walk around with my gun in my belt, or I just walk around. I've been walking around the house with my gun on. Like, it's just fun. This is not illegal. No one will call the cops for this, or this is not, you know what I mean? Like, this, I mean, not to say it wasn't illegal in my apartment in LA to wear a gun, but if someone saw you from the outside, they would call the cops on you for sure. They'll call 911. There's this Asian guy with a gun, and he's, and then they would come, the SWAT team would come, and they would shoot me, and all over what? Just because I wanted to try out my new holster. Okay. Anyways, not an issue here. I just, you know, if I'm wearing sweats, I'll throw throw a gun in a fanny pack and just walk around. It's fine. I don't care that much about anything. Like, people cut me off in the road, I'm like, whatever. It's not worth shooting anybody over, right? Like, nothing's worth shooting anybody over unless it is. And so almost nothing is worth it. Nothing is worth getting upset over when I got that thing on me. All right. When I got this biscuit, when I'm carrying my biscuit, I don't care. Like, anything can happen, right? You can fucking call my mama a bitch. And as long as I got that biscuit on me, I'm like, Hakuna Matata, motherfucker, right? I'm just going to go get a weed drink, right? It's hard to really get across what it's like to come from a place where the water is stolen from everybody, and you learn about it as a kid, you're indoctrinated as a kid, how this is a good thing that we're taking the water from other people just to make this hellhole survive, right? Like, that's a good thing you learn as a kid, and it's fine, it's great. I mean, whatever. It is what it is. However, to go from that to a place where water is just springing eternal from the ground. There's a place, like, you drive a couple miles, and this is where we get our drinking water. It's a place called the Spigot. It's literally just a PVC pipe coming out of the side of the mountain, because I guess there's a spring or a groundwater thingy. It was just this giant thing of water that provides water for the entire town. I mean, in some ways, I'm learning that it may be silly to go there to get drinking water, because the same water is actually running through the tap. But the tap, you know, obviously there's the pipes and whatnot. But they don't treat the water because it's so close to the source. So it's like going from a desert literally to a wellspring, right? Like going from a place of no water to lots of water. And soon we will find out what it means to be around lots of water when things get very, very cold. Apparently it can get up to 50 below, which is a lot colder than I'm used to from New York. I think New York got around zero. I think it went below zero a couple times. So this will be new. It'll suck. But I don't know. I'm okay with it. I don't actually mind the cold. I know some people hate the cold. I don't really mind it. You get used to it, and you get outside and you just kind of get active, and I don't know, whatever. Also here, it's not like New York where I have to walk around, you know, too much. So we'll see. Snow tires will be a whole thing that, I guess I'll find out this winter if I can make it driving around in icy conditions. We'll see. I'm sure it'll be fine. But, you know, I heard my lady told me that someone told her that they were over the spigot, okay? They were just over it, over the spigot, which I was aghast when I heard. How could you be over the spigot? Of course, I understand being from a place that's completely the opposite, right? That's like me being over, what's like the Walk of Fame, which is nothing. The Walk of Fame is not a life-giving source of replenishment. You know, that's not what that is. Maybe it is for some people, but that they're sick. But anyways, I get it. But I mean, I think to myself, is that how jaded I'm going to get here? Is that what's going to happen? Am I going to walk around and just be like, another tree, just another fucking tree? Like, I mean, is that how I'm going to get, like, you know, I hope not. There's a serenity that comes from being around lots of trees. There's some kind of thing grounded from being next to giant mountains, you know? Just, you know, you conceal carry around a giant mountain and you're just like, I don't have a care in the world. I don't really care. I don't care about things, honestly. What, Ukraine? What? There's that. Look at that mountain. Look at that fucking mountain, okay? Do you think that fucking mountain gives a shit about Ukraine? I care about this mountain. It's right here. It's literally right here. If this mountain, something happens, like it explodes, there's like a, it turns out to be a volcano, like I'm fucked. Like that is the most pressing thing. There's grizzly bears come down from that mountain, okay? And they're going to be rummaging through the trash, probably springtime. I don't know. I mean, that's my main concern. Not, you know, Zelensky and how much more money he needs. I don't know. I don't care about that. Look. Someone's going to come at me. I got that thing on me. And if the shit goes down, we're just going to hide in the mountains. Probably not. Probably the Sasquatch will get me in the mountains. So definitely I respect the mountain. I don't want to go up there. I mean, I do want to go up there. I want to go in. There's a park, national park and everything. I want to go in there. But I'm just saying I'm going to traipse around like I'm some fucking, you know, mountain man or something, you know, because I'm definitely not. I'm definitely the more... This is like... The most cityfied, I suppose, I feel, being in a place that's, it's not really country, but just country-esque. I mean, there is a rodeo in the town, so I guess that is pretty country. So, you know, I can't, everybody works with wood. This whole town is a place of woodworkers, right? Like, I don't know how to work with wood or tools. Like, I'm useless. I'm good with words. Huh? I'm good with talking. I'm good with work. I'm a people person. You know, so, but that's something I'm actually looking forward to, is getting into more carpentry, doing stuff with my hands, you know, fixing my guns, stuff like that. That'll be fine. I don't know. It's just, it'll be interesting, you know, it'll be interesting, like, as time goes by. I'm still new, so I'm just kind of, it's like this, both the honeymoon phase, but also like a surreal feeling of like, whoa, this is not vacation. This isn't a vacation. Like I live here now. I think it'll be obvious it's not a vacation when I'm snowed in, you know, by a few feet of snow. And I'm like, oh, this is not vacation. What kind of vacation is this? I don't know. I just, you know, like, look, one of the more exciting pieces of news is my lady saw a moose. She saw a moose. She went into the national park. She saw a moose. It's like nobody ever saw. Nobody sees moose. Moose in the park. They never said. And she got video of it. And it's giant. Okay, it's a massive moose. I want to see a moose. Where the fuck is this moose? Moose is in the mountain. Okay, those are my concerns. I don't care about Biden's reelection campaign or any of that. You know, I care. But did you hear about the moose? Right. I mean, it's crazy because like. You know, in L.A., it'll just be like, did you hear so-and-so got booked at the Comedy Store? You know, so-and-so got a spot at the Improv. But now I'm super excited by, you know, Nicole saw a moose. That's what I'm excited. Did you hear? She saw I want to see a moose. Okay. I mean, one day, I'd like to hunt a moose one day. Not with my bare hands. No, you know, a team of people. I think I would need a team, not like the A team or something, or, you know, just other hunters. Cause I don't know what I'm doing. What am I going to do? But also it's a lot of meat. So I think I would need help and I'll probably die of being, cold or something, you know, frozen. Something will happen if I'm there by myself. So, you know, obviously we'll have some people, but moose meat, I'm ready for it. I'll have some moose meat. I don't care. Okay. But moose news, I'm just saying, moose news, I never got moose news in L.A. You think I'd, you know, I would call people a moose if they were, like, fat or something. I don't know, you know, that's the most, but, you know, and I don't care. Like, you tell me the moose is getting booked at the Comedy Store and I'll be interested in the Comedy Store, okay? I don't care about the Comedy Store, as I call it, the communist store now, right? They completely capitulated. to the COVID policies before there were even COVID policies. They made up their own COVID policies. All the clubs in LA made up their own COVID policies before there were even COVID policies, which is, yeah, exactly what a place of stand-up comedy should do. A place that was, that the First Amendment protects, that the place of freedom protects. Okay, I lived across the street from the Holocaust Museum and they asked me for my papers when I tried to go inside. Of course, I'm lying. I never try to go inside, but I did see they were checking for papers. Okay. I didn't want to go in there, but they were asking for papers. Okay. May I see your papers? Your papers, please. You know, that's like a trope, a Nazi trope, like from the last, if you guys are around last century. Okay. Made a lot of jokes about the Nazis and their, where are your papers? That's like a thing. People would just say to be like, you're acting like a Nazi. Okay. Now they literally asked for them. Of course, now everything's fine. You say, right? Everything's fine. Everything's back to normal. Everything's, come on, Rojan. You're just like a, you've been radicalized, right? Like, No. See, I think that is what the veil is, right? It's, you know, I saw this thing while the lockdowns are going on. There's this video that went viral about like how you can make a society crazy, right? Like how you can make a society crazy and you do it through mass formation, right? Mass formation psychosis. And, you know, there are a lot of scholars that talk about this shit. And, you know, you look at things like the witch trials and you look at things like the revolution, French Revolution, just periods of total chaos, and see what happens and how the powers that be are using people, right? To, how they manipulate them through fear, which if you think about, that's exactly what happened, you know, during the pandemic or the lockdowns, right? Like that's what happened. And yeah, it's all different, man. So it's like they use something called waves of terror. Okay. You'll even see it as they talk about like the different strains of, even now they're starting to amp up the wave of terror, right? Everything kind of calms down, right? Everything calms down, everything seems back to normal, and then boom, they hit you with something, right? You know, it was 9/11 back in the day. It was terror attacks back in the day, you know, shootings. It'll hit you with disease. Now it's disease, you know, people are getting sick. Oh, the cases are right. Look at this graph. Look at this scary graph and these red numbers going up. Oh my God, put on a mask. Does it do anything? Don't even ask or you're a fucking Nazi. Now show me your papers. This is the world that became, okay? And then went away. And everybody's supposed to think that, oh, that's not going to come back at all. That's not going to come back at all. Yeah, but I think that's foolish to me to not see that people, how fast people are capable of complying, how fast they are capable of ratting on each other, okay? How fast they are capable of giving into fear and irrationality and then turning on you. My own family members, right? My own family members, not necessarily turn, but, you know, ostracize, you know, not let me in the house or whatever because I wasn't vaccinated, you know, not... Yeah. So in the end, it's a new world. Okay. And you know, okay, maybe I'm being dramatic. Maybe I am. Okay. But I don't know. I don't think I'm like a drama queen. You know, I'm just kind of looking at things, you know, trying to observe what's going on with people, what's going on, especially with psychology. I think a lot of people were broken. And I think something was especially terrifying being in a place. I learned that 85% of people in LA got vaccinated, right? They followed the mandates. And to me, that is, you know, terrifying. Like, because when the next thing comes around, listen, I voted for Trump and I know my name's on a list in LA. You know, that's why I got armed up. You know, like, I mean, and to even have that kind of paranoid notion tells me that, okay, I should probably leave here. It's probably not safe for me if things go the way I think they might go. If they don't, great. But you'll always have that underlying tension, right, of being, you know, one of the people that didn't comply, and so you're the bad guy, right? Nicer to come to a place where people don't really care. Nobody cares. It's fine. And, you know, and I got that biscuit on me, all right? So don't fucking step to me. And I can... get high and no one will arrest me for it. So that's great. So anyways, it has been a rather long hiatus. I do appreciate any of you out there who actually still have me on your feed and are listening and have listened this far. I have nothing to promote. I have nothing except that I am going to start a media company. I think maybe the next cast I will go into depth about my new media company, my new media venture that I'm starting, Triple Elite Media, okay? You heard it here first. We're coming, okay? We're coming for you, Bitcoin Media. We're coming for you, all right? Expect us. Well, anyways, thank you so much for listening to the Roach and Kim cast. You know, if you want to share this episode or something, that would be amazing. If you want to just spread the word, get it out there that there's some crazy Asian guy in the mountains rambling about God knows what at any given time. You know, please do so. Also, follow me on Twitter at Roach and Kim, and follow everybody that you see who follows me that has Triple Elite memes or hashtag TEM in their profile. Okay? Do that. All right. I think that's it for now. Goodbye.